You are listening to the Teaching Online English Podcast. Here we explore the world of teachers teaching one of the world's most widely spoken languages. I'm pleased you are joining us here with thousands of other listeners and learning about the experience of English language teachers. You will get tips and advice in getting a job in teaching the English language. Also, what skills you need to become an English language teacher, and much more. I'm your host, Samantha Todd, an online English teacher and digital marketer. Hi friends, let's welcome Hannah from the UK to the show. She is super passionate in her students and is very devoted towards her education. Here is what Hannah had to share about her journey. How did you get started as an online or offline English teacher? Talk me through it, Hannah.
So about 5 years ago, when I started university, it was to begin with to make a little bit of extra money because it's expensive at university. So I decided to use my English degree in a more practical way. So I started teaching through a website, and I was teaching face to face. And then as time progressed, I started working in one of like the UK's leading EFL schools. And that just inspired me more. I was like, oh, I really want to do this. I really, really want to do this more. Because at the time I was a language assistant. And then I did my master's in English. And again, I picked it up again. And at this time I got more and more sort of more and more students. And from that, I think it was kind of like, okay, I can do this. I can be an English teacher. And I think the interest was a real confidence boost. And then I worked in a tutoring centre in the UK of quite a well-known company. And then decided last year, strange time, 3 weeks before lockdown started, I thought, I'm going to do this as a business. So I moved cities, I quit my job, and I set it up. It's taken off and it's been great. And now I work, I have my own students in the UK, but I also work for an internationally renowned company, teaching kids like 4 to 14 in China. So I've kind of got two jobs on the go, but yeah, so that's, and I teach completely online now. So yeah.
Wow, that is like really, I am so proud of you. You're up and running a startup right here. Do you have like a good time management that you do?
So I have a color-coded calendar. I'm very organized. I think that's been my biggest problem actually, is being like saying no. I think I'm very much someone who'll just, this isn't a good thing, like work themselves into the ground. I'll be like, yeah, I can help. So I think at one point during like lockdown winter, when there was nothing to do anyway, I was working like 8 a.m. till 8 p.m. most days, like teaching solidly like eight and a half hours, like grabbing some lunch in between. I was like, right, let's go again. So it was a bit mental, but things are a little bit better now because things slow down for the summer. So I'm kind of enjoying this sort of the little bit of a break that I've not had to like cancel lessons for. I've just, you know, I can just take some time out. So yeah, I'm enjoying that at the moment. But usually it's a color-coded calendar, scheduling in breaks, scheduling in lunch, otherwise I won't take it. That's kind of how I'm managing the workload and giving myself restrictions on how many hours I'll teach every day and things. So yeah.
That's good that you found like a good work-life balance. I don't think too much is, it can be unhealthy, but you seem like you have a strategy and you have everything, like a good handle on it. Do you have preference in teaching adults or children in your classes? If so, why?
That's a good question. I've always enjoyed teaching adults. I think because like I love my job and I love teaching grammar. I love getting into the nitty-gritty of languages. And I tell my family that and they're like, you're so weird. But I'm like, no, I love it. So I think when you're teaching adults, you can get into that sort of nitty-gritty grammar and you can get into the deeper stuff. And I think with children, you can't always do that. A lot of the time it's, you know, A, A, B, B. And I think that's great. And I do like doing that. But I think for me, I really like teaching adults. And most of the time they want to be there. The same cannot always be said for a child that's being sat there and is rolling their eyes and like, my mum's making me do this. I don't want to be here, which is sometimes the case. But I do enjoy teaching children, and some of my students that I've had for over a year, we've built a really good relationships and a really good sort of working relationship. And, you know, they respect you and you've gotten to know them on a level where their lessons are more tailored. You can sort of see how their behavior is going to go. So I enjoy teaching students I have that are children because you've sort of built that up together. But yeah, I know when I'm teaching an adult, straight away there's going to be a sense of respect and a sense of, okay, I really want to get the most out of this as I can. And that's always been my experience when I've taught adults. It's always been, I want to know everything, tell me. So that's always quite nice to have that. But I just like, I like feeling and I like knowing that they're getting something from it, and that's a really rewarding feeling. So yeah,
it's really good you have preferences between the adults and children, and it's good balance for you. Awesome. Is it necessary to have a side hustle or an additional source of income while teaching English online or offline?
It's a good question. It is a really good question. I started doing it. I started building up my client base while I was working in my other job at a tutoring center. And so that was good in terms of, you know, it wasn't just jumping straight from the frying pan into the fire, as they say. It was kind of like building it up. And then I decided one day, I was like, I just don't want to do this job anymore. I just want to do this. I want to teach EFL mainly. That's what I teach. I do teach English to like British kids as well. And I think that was helpful to start with, having that side bit. So I'd say if you're starting out, then maybe it's a good idea to, you know, have something else. You know, if you've got another job that you're leaving, maybe start to build up a client base alongside that if you can, if that's okay with your employer, and then do it that way. And then sort of testing the waters and saying, okay, you know, do I like this? Is this for me? And then if that's the case, you know, you just keep building up until you, you know, you make that decision and say, actually, no, I want to do this. And I think in my experience, I think applying and applying and applying and really putting yourself out there and marketing yourself has been really effective in then getting where I am today. Yeah, it really depends on your comfortability. I think confidence has a lot to do with it, but also your availability as well in terms of a side hustle or another job.
That's a really good tip, really great reasonings on why one would be able to want to have incorporate a side hustle with this passionate profession. What was your motivation in teaching your student?
Again, I think I just really enjoy seeing them get something they really struggled with. I think when it comes to teaching, try and be as enthusiastic as possible. And yeah, I think then them responding to that and then responding to the teaching and going, ah, I get it. You're like, yes. And I think for me, that is a constant motivator. The other motivator is I love what I do. I love teaching. I love English. That's what I did for my degrees. And I think I always knew when I was at university, I was like, I really want to do something with it. I think sometimes I saw some of my friends doing very niche degrees, but actually not using them. They've got great jobs and they're really happy. But I think I was like, no, I really want to use this. I really want to do something with this. And I think passing on that and motivating others and getting excited about the things that, you know, excite me, I think it really helps. Constant motivator to keep doing it on days where I'm like, oh, I'm like, no, keep going, you can do it.
So you have that key component to keep you driving, you teaching, because sometimes being on the go all the time can get a little tiring, but you have that strong motivation. You have like a fulfilled passion. You want to utilize, you want to impact, and you want to help others.
Yeah.
So that's really, did or do you ever have a favorite lesson you have taught in the past?
There was one girl I had not that long ago, and I just showed up to every class and she was just so excited. She was just like, are we reading today? Are we doing grammar today? And I was like, oh, and I was just so happy because I was like, she loves this. And I was excited because I love reading. So I was like, yeah, we're reading today. We're going to read this. And she's like, oh, I can't wait. So I think for me, those were always great lessons. And they're the lessons that kind of go really fast as well, which is in a way, I think sometimes when you've got a lesson, it's going quite slow and they're not getting it and they're not very engaged. You're like, oh man. But those lessons go so fast and they're so good. And I think they would always be my favorite one. Students where you just get lost in the lesson because you're having so much fun and they want to be there. The best lessons are the ones where they really want to be there and they really want to engage. So I'd say they're my favorite, the people that show up and want to just get involved. I can't really pinpoint a particular favorite lesson I've ever had, but I would definitely say my students that show up and are like, I want to learn, I want to do this, they're always my favorite, because I think on both sides it's really rewarding.
One student you said who was just so enthusiastic moment, and also did being an English teacher inspire you to learn a second language yourself?
Yeah, funnily enough, I'm currently sat in my office with Spanish verbs all over my my corkboard above my desk. So I've been learning Spanish for about 3 years now. But yeah, taking it seriously in the past year. So I myself have Spanish teachers, so I'm currently learning another language as a foreign language, which I think is really important, and I think it's really good. And it's been very humbling to be on the receiving end of being, oh my gosh, I have no idea what they're saying. And I think that's really good when you get put in that situation and then you're teaching someone else the same way and you're saying it really confident. I'm like, why aren't they getting this? And then being like, oh, I felt that same way. So I think that's been really good. And I think it's definitely inspired me to learn Spanish. But I also just really enjoy learning. I do learning as like a hobby. So I think that's just naturally what I'm like. I've been getting into French lessons.
Learning these different languages. Now you understand how your students feel day after day. Do you employ a warm-ups or introductions in your classes? If you do, would you like to share some with our audience?
I tend to with the younger ones. They tend to be more like games and things. So sometimes we'll play like noughts and crosses or tic-tac-toe, I think some people call it, I'm not sure. So it's like a grid of 9 pictures that's like the vocabulary we'll be covering. So for example, if we were looking at weather systems, there might be like a rainy cloud, a sun, some snow, and I'll say to them, okay, you need to circle a picture and say what it is. There's a lot of like almost sign language going on when you're teaching EFL. So I'll be like, circle a picture and say what it is. And that's a really good way of then introducing the target language, circling the picture, and that involvement, that game kind of then gets it into their head. And it's fun for them as well. They enjoy playing a game. With the adults, usually I'm teaching a lot of like tense work. So it'll start off more as a discussion. Because a lot of my older students, it tends to be the case they want to practice their speaking. So if I'm teaching them the past tense, I might be like, okay, what have you done this week? You know, how's your day been? And it's just a really casual way of getting into it. More of a, hello, how are you been? And a sneaky way of getting into what we're going to be talking about today. They tend to be my common ones. And sometimes if I'm doing a reading with children, we call it hangman. So I started drawing houses because I think that's a little more. So I usually do that on the topic of what we're reading about. And they had to guess what it was about. So that was a nice warm up and like, okay, we're reading about travel today. And
sounds like you have a lot of fun with these lessons in your warm ups. You're making them feel comfortable and getting them ready. Do you have any teaching philosophies that you follow in your class?
My philosophy personalized on what they're finding hard. And I think I very much believe getting to where you want to be starts with meeting you where you are. I think so often in school systems, it can be very much of an umbrella learning. And I think some students that are finding it really difficult don't always get that one-on-one attention. Our teachers are amazing. 30 children on one task. And that's a miracle in itself. I have one student and sometimes they're not on task. And I'm like, oh my word, how do people do it? But I really like having that connection with the students and being like, okay, what are you finding difficult? Okay, well, let's start there then, rather than just whapping out the curriculum and being like, right, we need to do this week, is meeting them where they are. And the other thing I believe and is that to be a good teacher, you've got to be a good learner. And I think, like I said, learning a language has been really helpful for that. And it's like being a good writer, you have to be a good reader. I think that kind of philosophy applies in teaching as well, is, you know, got to educate yourself. You can't go in there being like, I know it all.
I agree with you. What cultural norms did you learn while teaching students online?
I think more than anything, I've garnered a lot of respect for the different curriculums in different countries. And I've been quite interested to see how, as in the UK, how we view education versus other countries. And I think it's quite interesting, not to generalize the UK, but I think even growing up myself, there didn't seem to be much emphasis on extracurricular learning. You went to school, you got home, and then the afternoon was yours. Whereas a lot of the students I teach, they're so passionate. And I think it's because it's ingrained in them from a very young age. You need to get as much as you can out of this. You need to learn, learn, learn. And it's been really interesting. Lots of different children's sort of schedules, you know, since the minute they get up to the minute they go to bed, they've got a plan. And I'm like, okay. And I think in a way it sort of challenged the culture of the UK. I think it's challenged my perceptions of education as well, how important it is and that it is a privilege to have education. I think sometimes it's seen as a burden, you know, I've got to go to school and I'm like, oh, and I think we've all been there. Gone to school some days and just thought, oh. But I think as I've grown up and I've seen people so eager to learn to better themselves, I think it's really challenged the way that I think we see education, particularly in the UK as a whole. I think it can sometimes feel like a burden for children rather than something to be enjoyed and something that is ultimately a privilege to have. And I think if I could go back in time, I was a bit of like a goody two-shoes and a bit of like, I think at the time I wish I'd, you know, I wish I carried on learning my second language then, you know, so I could be further along now. But yeah, if I could go back and just try and absorb it all and maybe change my attitude a little bit, because at times it was a little bit like, oh, this is so hard, I don't even want to do this. But I think now looking at other countries where education is not as accessible, I think it's made me really, really appreciative of what we have. That's the thing that's been challenged the most culturally.
Reasons why, you know, those different cultural norms can definitely impact your environment, your world. Thank you for sharing. I definitely understand living in the States, how we do take our education for granted here, and then other places, they see that as like a privilege, as something fun. They incorporate that in their lifestyle. And over here in wealthier countries, we do undermine education. What's one thing that you wish you had known when you began your teaching career?
To relax. I think sometimes I can be a little bit like, right, lesson plan, we need to do this. And I used to be very particular. I used to spend hours and hours planning lessons. And then when it got to the point where I was teaching 6 hours a day and trying to make time to lesson plan, that just wasn't. So I think I learned to sort of adapt and not be so, I guess, highly strung about it, just to had pre-plans from times before and just adapting throughout the lesson. You know, if something's not working, then that's okay to change. It's okay to improvise. You know, it's not like we have to do this. So I think if I'd have known that before, that it, you know, it's not the end of the world if things go wrong or if things aren't right, that's okay. And I think there have been situations, I guess, where a student's having a bit of a tantrum and you're like, but I've got a plan, you know, but actually trying to persevere through a plan when a child's like that is not, for your own sense of I need to be a good teacher, is actually more harmful than being like, okay, right, we're going to do this instead. So I think if I could have known anything, it was just to chill a little bit earlier on.
I think those are really helpful. Have you faced challenges while teaching, and what did you learn from any of them?
Lots of challenges, definitely. And they come in different forms, I guess. And like I said before, if a child's having a bit of a tantrum and doesn't really want to be there, it can be quite difficult because you only see what you can see on the screen. You know, it's not like in a classroom where you can get the whole context, you can see the whole room and why are they frustrated and why are they upset. You've got that, unless they move you, all you can see is a wall. So that can be quite difficult. So trying to talk to them, even if they're off screen, or trying to get a parent's attention to come and talk, that is one way I try and do it. Biggest problems I face as an online teacher is internet connection. That can be so hard. So I think in that as well, I've learned just to persevere and again, chill a little bit. If it goes down, it goes down. There's nothing I can do. I just got to try and get it back up and just keep try and get it working again. But that seems to be the biggest thing I face as a teacher. So I've learned a lot about patience, I think. And I think just learning, again, just to be calm. Me stressing or me getting worked up is not going to change anything. So I think just rolling with the situation, trying your best to resolve it. If it's technical, if it's behavioural, just trying to sort of come to a calm conclusion and a calm solution. Yeah, by communicating the best you can.
Those are really great ways to navigate challenges. What is one common myth about your profession or field that you may like to debunk with the audience?
I think there is the sense of the idea that you have to know it all. The teacher doesn't know everything, and that's okay. You know, as the teacher, you're meant to have all the answers. And again, I don't think that's very healthy. I think it's good for the students to say, Miss doesn't know what it is, so I'm okay that I don't know everything. Because sometimes I'll have students that will apologize and be like, I'm really sorry I got it wrong. And I'm like, it's fine. You know, you learn more than anything when you get it wrong, and that's fine. To get the dictionary up on my computer, and they're like, what does this word mean? I'm like, 1 minute, let me get you a really good definition. I'm like, I don't know. So I think there have been many times where I've had to just hold my hands up and say, I don't know, let's learn together. It's okay to not have it all together or not to know all the answers.
Okay, yeah, that was a really great one. Do you have any goals that you're working towards in 2021? Would you like to share them with the audience?
Yeah, of course. I am looking to move abroad at some point. To go into a classroom. So I'd love to go to Spain, hence the Spanish, but also it's just great learning another language. Yeah, so I'd really like to go abroad and take my teaching into an actual classroom. So I'm looking to do that perhaps in the next year to 18 months. That would be great. To be honest, anywhere that'll have me. I'll go anywhere at this point. No, it'd just be really nice, I guess, to go in and see a new place, to teach in a new place and be lovely. That's kind of the goal I'm working towards at the moment. But more short-term goals is just getting more experience, really, into doing like little programs, doing extra courses, get more teaching experience, taking on specialist training courses in like grammar and marketing and things like that to help me out. Probably my short-term goals is just to keep building up experience and knowledge.
Yeah, perfect. Those sound some exceptional goals, and I hope you will achieve them. That'll be really fun to go from the small screen to the big class. It's commonly thought that one can teach English remotely online from anywhere in the world, thus allowing for a nomadic lifestyle. Has this been your experience?
Yeah, it's good. I think naturally I'm quite a nomadic person. I like to be able to go and do my own thing and sort of go off and not feel stuck, I think, sometimes in one place. So it's quite nice. I can go home for a week and see my family and just take my laptop with me and be like, right, I've got to work for like 4 hours and then we can go out for some tea or something. So I think it's quite nice having that ability to just go where I want, really. Take work with me, go and see friends, you know, perk of online teaching versus offline teaching. You're kind of your own boss as well, especially remotely. You can be like, actually, I'm not doing those hours today, or I'm taking this time. And
that's wonderful. Detached lifestyle. Do the majority of your students reside in one country, or are they spread out all over the world across several time zones? Does that pose any challenges for you?
Most of my students are in China or in Asia. I've got a student in South Korea. I'm very fortunate. The time zone works in my favor. So I work 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. in most days in China. And for them, it's, what time is it? It's 5 to 10 p.m. for them. So yeah, some of the little ones. So when I'm teaching like 2 p.m. and it's like 10 p.m. and there's like a 5-year-old trying to learn English, I'm like, that's a bit early. But I mean, I'm quite fortunate that it works in my favor. But yeah, I think at one point I had a student in Panama and then a student in China, and Panama is 6 hours behind. So I ended up working 9 till 2, and then in the evening I was working 8 till 9, I think, one night. So trying to just manage and make sure that you've got the time zone like translation correct, so you're not missing classes, is probably one of the stresses of my job. But yeah, it's not a bad stress. So
saying like the different adjustments of the time zones and coordinating that as best you can. Have you ever taught privately, or has it been only through online platforms?
I guess I get my students through online platforms like tutoring sites, but it's private tuition. It's just these platforms are there to connect students with teachers. I work, as I said, I'm employed by a very reputable company. I work for them. And then I have like a self-employed, I get a lot of my students through these websites.
Yeah, that's really great. Where can people find you on the internet?
In the process of building a website, my lifestyle has made it that it's been quite hard to finish that. So at the moment, I'm happy to give my email address if people want to get in touch. Otherwise, I have a profile on a website called Tutorful, and so it's Hannah D. Otherwise, you can get in contact with me via my email address, which is hkdarbyshire@hotmail.com. Darbyshire is a bit of a tricky surname, so it's spelled D-E-R-B-Y-S-H-I-R.
Wonderful. Thank you, Hannah. Mm-hmm. Yes, I will insert all of Hannah's contact information in the show notes on the website, so you'll be able to reach out to Hannah for any private tutoring lessons, or if you want to learn some more information about teaching online and operating a business online. So thank you again, Hannah. We are happy to have you on our show. It was such a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.